morning, and welcome to the KUNM Call-In Show. I'm your host, Marisa DeMarco, a reporter with the Public Health New Mexico Project. A little over a year ago, the state Supreme Court issued rules that aimed to clear a huge backlog of criminal cases in Bernalillo County. The rules were intended to make sure defendants spent less time in lockup waiting for their day in court. But there was pushback against the tighter deadlines from law enforcement and prosecutors who said dangerous criminals could escape justice and be back on the street as a result of the changes. Today we're taking a look at efforts to speed up trials in the state's busiest judicial district. Do you have a story about spending months in jail waiting for your case to be heard? Or have you or someone you loved been negatively impacted by a defendant who got off easy because of these deadlines? Call now 277-5866 or toll free at 877-899-5866. We've got three guests who know the new rules inside and out today. Artie Pepin is the director of the Administrative Office of the Courts. District Attorney Carrie Brandenburg is here as well. And Jeff Ryan is the supervisor in the Felony Division of the Public Defender's Office. Thank you all for joining us.
It's a pleasure to be here.
Thanks.
I want to give a sense of the problems the new rules were trying to address when they were implemented in February of 2015. Public Defender Jeff Ryan, you make an interesting point about defendants that I think we should start with. These are folks who haven't been convicted yet and who are presumed innocent under the law, right?
Absolutely. The issue is sometimes is that once somebody's been arrested, there's a presumption of guilt, and it's just hard to see it otherwise for most people. The Constitution sounds, you know, it's a great idea that you're presumed innocent. But generally, once somebody gets arrested, in reality, the perception shifts. You're guilty until you prove that you're innocent. And so people end up sitting a long time before they're given an opportunity either to see the case worked out or have their day in court.
Now, before the rules went into effect, cases could sometimes take quite a long time, right?
That's true. There's more than a few examples over the last few years of cases taken years to work their way through the courts for all kinds of reasons, but ultimately it doesn't do anybody any good for a case to take a long period of time, not only for the defendant or the defendant's family, for the people who might be victims of a particular crime, for law enforcement, and for the public to see that it takes forever for things to happen. So the idea that we need to come up with some kind of rules to speed things up is appropriate.
Now, let's talk a little bit more about that. What was the effects that you've seen on defendants and their families?
Sort of every kind of human devastation that you can imagine. I mean, marriages and relationships break up. People get stuck in jail for a long period of time, lose contact with their kids. If they had a job, they certainly lost it. And the idea that you could come back out and pick it up again is not accurate. So not only do you then have a record, but just the social structure that we want to try and keep intact as a society gets broken apart. Kids don't know their fathers. There's nobody to work to help pay the bills. And you're stigmatized for an extraordinarily long period of time until the case is eventually resolved.
Now, sometimes people had to wait in jail if they couldn't afford bail. But even if they got out of jail, the system was kind of unpredictable, and it was hard to see when something would be resolved, right? So did that make it hard for people to make plans as their cases kind of dragged on?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, despite the fact that you almost can't, it's really hard to get a job if you have a pending felony charge. More and more employers are doing background checks, and they just don't want to take a chance on picking somebody up. So you end up doing the most basic low-wage jobs, even if you have skills and training that would give you the opportunity to do something more fulfilling than that. And it just is the unknown is one of the most difficult things for human beings. When you know what's going to happen, you can prepare for it. But if it just lingers and lingers and there's the potential for terrible things to happen, it's really stressful and destructive to people's ability to kind of carry on and live well.
Now, do you think people with lower incomes were disproportionately affected by these issues?
Well, sure, because people with lower incomes are less likely to be able to make a bond, which historically has been about the only way you can get out of jail in New Mexico. In the past, bonds have not necessarily reflected the seriousness of the crime or the particular individual's history. So in the years past, lots of people remained in jail because they couldn't afford a bond. And the fact that they were in jail wasn't necessarily reflective of the danger they might pose to the community or their perceived ability to come back to court, which are the two things that that bond is supposed to address, is are you a danger to the community and are you going to come back to court?
Now, before we get any further, I want to talk, Mr. Pepin, if we could briefly, about what exactly the rules did. Like, let's describe to everybody listening what these rules are and what they did.
So the rules really accomplished three things. The first thing is that when a person is charged with a crime in Bernalillo County, they're entitled to know the evidence that got them charged within a week to 10 days of when they get arrested. So that the rules require the district attorney to provide to the defendant the evidence that supported the charges, whether it was by a grand jury, because that's one way to charge people, or through a preliminary hearing. The second thing is that the rules make sure that scheduled events in court occur when they're supposed to. One of the reasons why Jeff was talking about how long it might take to get a case resolved. One of the reasons they took so long is because there were an awful lot of continuances in cases, criminal cases. And the judges realized they were participating in granting these continuances, and that would drag a case on for a very long time. Under the new rules, the judges, if an event's scheduled to occur, if you're going to have a hearing in your case, if you're going to go to trial in your case, it's going to happen when it's scheduled. And if the judge assigned to your case isn't available for some reason, they're sick, they're doing another trial, another judge will do that case that day because that event will occur that day. Predictability in the system is an important part of having a criminal justice system that works well. And the third thing is that resolution will occur on a scheduled basis. That is, cases are assigned to a track. There's three tracks. 6 months, 9 months, or 1 year from when the judge holds a hearing is when those things will occur. So there's a hearing. The district attorney and the defense attorney are present, and they talk about which track might be appropriate for this particular case. And the judge makes a decision and says, this is a 6-month case, 9-month case, 12-month case. That gives all the parties a clear indication of when a case will go to trial, because the scheduled trial date occurs that day. They're told it'll happen when on this date, and also when evidence must be produced. So if there's pending DNA evidence or drugs are being tested at the lab, everybody knows the date on which that testing has to be provided, when witnesses have to be interviewed by, and those kinds of things. So it does those three things. It creates the tracking system. It assigns cases to dates when things will actually occur, and it provides the defendant the evidence on which he or she was charged at the close to the time when they were charged.
Now, these rules were rolled out initially in February of 2015, and then last month we saw a little bit of changes from the Supreme Court as a result of some of the concerns that folks had, right?
Yes, I should say these new rules were implemented in the district court here on order of the state Supreme Court to address the significant backlogs that had developed in this county. And the court always intended that the rules could be adjusted as they went along, depending on issues that arose. The Supreme Court met with all the parties involved at the end of last year, had written comments from all the parties involved to address things that were needed to be changed. And some of those things were changed. For example, the Albuquerque Police Department said in cases of violent crimes, we need more time, a week or 10 days, more time to provide that preliminary information, the information on which a person got charged. And that rule was extended. With regard to dangerous persons, the district attorney said there are cases in which we may not be able to meet these deadlines for dangerous people. So the court adopted a change to the rule that allows for exceptions for those people that the district attorney can demonstrate are dangerous. The court added about 30 days to the timelines in different cases by changing when this initial hearing occurs, and also allowed for more time for those longer cases, the one-year cases, which tend to be the more serious cases, obviously homicides, cases that are complex and involved. They gave a little more time there to try to give the parties some measure of flexibility where they indicated it was most needed under the rules as they had worked for the first year.
Great. And we're going to hear from APD a little later on in our program. And we're also going to hear from you, District Attorney Brandenburg. I know you have a lot to say about this. But first of all, we've got Vincent on the line who can talk about how prolonged court processes affected his life. He asked us not to use his last name because some of these issues are still pending. Good morning, Vincent.
Good morning. How are you all?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing just fine, thank you.
Great. Vincent, how long did you wait in jail for your case to unfold?
So I wound up being about a total of 14 and a half months at MDC. And, these were charges that I really wanted to take to trial. And I had probably about a total of 6 different court dates. And, I mean, most of the time it would just, you know, I would go and they would continue it. Either the prosecution wasn't ready or I would really be pretty much meeting with my public defender for the first time during that court date. And it pretty much seemed to me like they were probably only seeing that my file like probably about 5 minutes before I got there. So they wouldn't really have a chance to look into anything or anything like that, you know. So it's kind of I started feeling real hopeless. And, you know, they would throw these pleas at me. And, you know, it's just, at some point, it's just like, well, am I ever going to get a chance to get a trial, or should I just take a plea? And that's what I wound up doing, was taking a plea.
So even though you wanted to take your case to trial, you ended up taking a plea deal.
Yeah. At that point, I just felt hopeless. You know, I was away from my family for so long. I've had to, you know, try to reunify with my children. And it's been rough. You know, I lost 14 months of my life that, you know, I really wanted to, I don't know. I mean, these charges were charges that there was no evidence. There was just hearsay charges, you know? And I just felt discouraged, and I was, like, pushed into taking a plea deal.
Now, this was a few years ago, right, before these new rules went into effect?
Yes. This is back when MDC was overloaded. This is when we had 96 men in a pod that was built for 64.
And do you think other inmates were experiencing a similar situation?
Yeah, there was a lot of, you know, men in there that were in there on, like, simple drug charges that just couldn't afford a bond, or, you know, just had issues like that, that just could not afford the bond, and they were just there for 6 months, 9 months, just waiting for a court date. And every time one would get continued, you'd get pushed back about 3 months.
All right, well, thanks for sharing your story with us this morning, Vincent.
Okay, well, thank you. I appreciate you guys listening.
Now, District Attorney Carrie Brandenburg, you're listening to all this. You're listening to these descriptions. What are you thinking this morning?
Well, you know, I heard Jeff, public defender, speak, and I can't say I disagree with a single thing that he said. I've heard Artie talk about the rule, and I think we're all in agreement we need it to do something. I am the prosecutor for Bernalillo County, but I tell you, that doesn't mean that we want people in jail that don't need to be in jail. I'm also a taxpayer, and I pay taxes, and that costs a lot of money. I also am a member of the community, and I want everyone in the community to be productive, connected to their spouses, their partners, their children, their jobs. And so I think there's a lot of agreement and common ground on this. Our issue is the fact that because of this, the new rule, I mean, we typically refer to it at our office as the CMS, but because of the new rule, our office has recently done extensive research. We've had over 900 dismissals of criminal cases. In addition to those over 900 dismissals, we've had over 1,300 NOLIs filed. Those are dismissals that our office filed and not the courts. And we believe that the vast majority of those are related to the new rule. And we've had 3,000 less cases indicted in Bernalillo County in 2015 than we had in 2014. So that means that a lot of cases are going by the wayside. Now, as a former defense attorney for 20 years, I like to get my clients early in their criminal career or early when they exercise bad judgment. And we are having to set priorities because of the new rule where we don't get someone until they're more hardened or they have more issues and they're more difficult to get them into resources, rehab, those kinds of things. And I talked to a detective yesterday. I won't mention his name, but he was saying, and I've said this before when we were discussing the rule, people are dying because of this new rule. People that we should keep in jail are not in jail because it takes a long time for the police department to get all of their reports and investigation and stuff. In the meantime, they're out. And this detective said that he thinks in this one case where there may be up to 6 people that were killed, possibly they could have stopped it at number 2. And prevented those homicides. I can refer to other cases. I don't want to because it's so horrific for the victims' families, where people were killed by individuals that should have been in jail, but for the CMO, we didn't have the discovery to go forward, and they were out on the streets. So we're all about not having anyone in jail that doesn't need to be in jail. We're all about speedy resolutions of cases, but the extreme deadlines. And we don't control when we get discovery. You know, we're getting fined because we don't have discovery. We're dependent on law enforcement for that. Now, we can work with them and we can meet with them, and we do hours every week, but we have no control. We're just kind of the middleman, and it's creating havoc in our community. And I think everybody agrees. Crime seems to be tremendously up, and I think statistics show that crime is up. So we're really thankful that the Supreme Court decided to make some revisions. We think those revisions are in the best interest, and we're working as hard as we can so that we can indict more cases. We won't have a 3,000 case difference next year, and that we won't have the 900 dismissals and all of the nullies, because those are individuals that aren't being held accountable that could possibly be reoffending.
Okay, so we're going to come right back to you. We're going to take a quick break. We're talking about speeding up criminal cases in Bernalillo County and unclogging the courts. This is the KUNM Call-In Show, and I'm your host, Marisa DeMarco, with KUNM's Public Health New Mexico Project. We're going to take a quick break.
The law firm of Rothstein Donatelli is committed to supporting public radio KUNM. Since 1976, the firm has litigated civil rights, criminal defense, wrongful death, security clearance, and Indian and family law cases throughout New Mexico. RothsteinLaw.com.
Support comes from UNM Continuing Education, where a variety of youth spring break camps for kids ages 5 through 17 are available the week of March 28th. For camp details, visit youth.unm.edu.
Getting your deductions ready for tax filing is a great time to think about how to get a big deduction next year by donating that old car or truck. If you've been meaning to, but just haven't gotten around to it, make that call today. Come next April 15th, you'll be glad you did. To find out about the tax benefits to donating your unwanted vehicle to KUNM, call 888-KUNM-CAR. That's 888-586-6227.
Welcome back to the KUNM Call-In Show. I'm your host, Marisa DeMarco. Jeff Ryan of the Public Defender's Office is here today, along with Artie Pepin of the Administrative Office of the Courts and District Attorney Carrie Brandenburg. Now, you were just talking about the idea that dangerous people have been let off the hook because of these new rules as your office and the Albuquerque Police Department try to kind of catch up with the new deadlines and the new system. What are some of the other issues that your office faced when you were trying to comply with the order?
Well, a lot of times in possession cases, we can't get proof soon enough to prove that whatever was taken was actually a narcotic substance, a prohibited substance. And so we just had to dismiss a lot of those cases. We just couldn't come in compliance. We don't have the infrastructure to make a lot of these changes. This is probably the most remarkable change in our criminal justice system in the last 30 years. Easily, not even a close call. And yet we did all of this, and the public defender did it, law enforcement did it, our office did it. Not sure about the courts, but I suspect we did this without any additional resources, which is part of the reason for a lot of the things that we experienced. I do think that the road's going to be smoother as we proceed. I think the first year was a train wreck in a lot of ways, but I think that we are proceeding. I want to emphasize the goal. We agree with the goal. It had to happen. We wanted cases to go to trial. We were begging judges for cases to go to trial, and we couldn't get them to trial. Typically, as a prosecutor, your cases get worse. Witnesses go away. Evidence goes away. Officers retire as the case proceeds. I think as a defense attorney, other than the tremendous disadvantage that it puts their clients in, and it's, you know, personally it's tremendous, their cases tend to get better with time because witnesses go away, officers retire, you know, evidence changes. But so we are all in favor of a more speedy resolution. It's just a more just thing to do.
And is the problem in keeping up with these deadlines and the timeline, is it a resources issue?
I think it's a resource issue. It's an issue for us with law enforcement. We can't give the defense reports if we don't have the reports. You know, we're not part of, we don't control what law enforcement does, how they organize, what their priorities are. And we can only give them what we have. And so we have a big backlog of cases that we're holding, waiting to get the information that we need. We've developed lists and forms and ways to communicate and systems to try to encourage law enforcement to get those reports. Now, we also work with the state police, university police, the sheriff's department, and the police department. We work with DEA, FBI, Secret Service. So there's a lot of agencies that we work with.
Right. And so I want to give Mr. Pepin a chance to respond to the idea that the new rules have made, you know, have created a public safety issue, which is, it sounds like the way that District Attorney Brandenburg is characterizing it.
Well, Marissa, I think I have a different perspective on that. You know, I can't talk about cases which haven't been charged. I note that the homicide cases are outliers, and those maybe need to be dealt with specially. There were 14 homicides in fiscal year 14 prosecuted by the district attorney. There's thousands and thousands of cases that go through the system that affect everybody else in the system every day. I want to be real clear about two things. First, the rule didn't come out of thin air. The Supreme Court didn't drop it on the system last February. The commission that came up with a recommendation to change the way cases get processed in Bernalillo County because they were taking so long worked for over a year before that rule was put into effect. Members of the commission had meetings with the Supreme Court in 2014. We meet every month, and we spend a lot of time talking about what kind of rules could be implemented. And everybody had their chance to comment on parts of it. And the court then implemented the rule it implemented. The court spent that year figuring out how to work differently because the rules would change the way things happened in courts. Since the rule went into effect, the number of jury trials that the courts hold has doubled. They have twice as many jury trials. They don't have any more judges. They don't have any more people. In fact, we have less money now than we did when we started. The fact is, the job has to be done. Criminal justice in Bernalillo County has to be constitutional, and it has to do its best to assure public safety. On the issue of public safety, it is not in the interest of the people of Bernalillo County to have cases take 2 or 3 years before someone pleads guilty, or 14 months in the case of Mr. Vincent, who called in. Those cases don't have to be provable at the moment the case starts. What the requirement is under the case management rule is that what got the person charged has to be presented to them. These are police reports, names of witnesses, basically. If it's a drug case, they don't have to produce a report that the lab tested the drugs and it turns out to be cocaine or whatever. The requirements for those kinds of forensic evidence are set in the rule, but they come later. What has to be presented is probable cause. That's something that's enough to get you arrested and for the judge to say, okay, there's enough evidence here that this case is going to proceed. Here's the deadlines we're going to set in this case. That's the evidence that's required to be produced up front. And then the deadlines of the rule tell you when the other kinds of evidence have to be in place. So the rule, in effect, promotes public safety. Having these things resolved within 6 months, 9 months, or a year is the way a system is supposed to work, and we will achieve that. In fact, I think we are achieving it now because we started out when this rule was implemented last February. There were over 3,000 cases that were so old, they were put on a special docket called the special calendar. And four judges were assigned just to work through those very old cases. Some of them were years and years old. That's how the backlog had developed.
Mm-hmm.
And the new rules applied to new cases that went from that day forward. Those judges have worked very hard in the court system, as have the prosecutors and the defense attorneys. And now there's about 600 of those 3,000 cases remaining. By the end of this year, that docket will go away. That is, those cases will all be done, and every case will be on this new system. But something had to be done within the resources we had, and it required a great deal of work, I can certainly tell you from the court side, for everybody at the court in Bernalillo County to get through those cases and to get this new system into place. It works for the people, and I think it promotes public safety because it provides clear understanding of how the system works and resolution of these cases in a way that complies with the Constitution.
All right. We're going to take a quick call from Fred in Albuquerque. Good morning, Fred.
Good morning.
What are your questions or comments this morning?
Well, first of all, it seems to me like the new rule makes things, the justice system, different in Albuquerque from the rest of the state, and I wondered why that was.
I can answer that, Marissa.
Yeah, go for it.
The reason the Supreme Court focused on Bernalillo County is because, through the work of this commission, the whole reason the commission was created was because there were perceptions that there were difficulties in Bernalillo County. Cases were taking way too long to get resolved. And it shouldn't take 2 or 3 years for somebody to get charged with a fourth-degree felony to have their case resolved. We don't have evidence that that's the case in the other districts in the state. There's 13 judicial districts. This is one of them. And the rules apply in Bernalillo County because that's where the problem was. It's called a pilot case management order. That's what the rule is called. If these kinds of problems were to develop chronically in other districts, I'm sure the Supreme Court, under its authority and responsibility to make the courts work properly, would give attention to those areas. And so this commission, which involved the prosecutor, the public defender, the jail, the police officers, BCSO, Bernalillo County Sheriff's Office, and Albuquerque Police Department, Probation and Parole Department, and the Metropolitan Detention Center, worked through the issues and did a lot of things affecting the jail population that don't have to do with these new rules under the case. And these rules are intended to make the system work better. I can tell you that the work of that commission altogether has resulted in a reduction of the jail population of over 40% and compliance with a federal requirement that the population not exceed 1,950 that hadn't been complied with for over a decade.
Right. So are you saying, Mr. Pepin, that the reason that this situation is different in Bernalillo County, or that these rules are in effect in District 2, is because that's where the problems really were?
That is where the problem was identified as acute. The commission was created by a statute, by legislative action. It wasn't that the Supreme Court said, we hear rumors about things happening in Bernalillo County. Bernalillo County had issues, and those issues needed to be resolved. And through the work of this commission, one of the recommendations that came out of it was to do something about the way, the speed with which cases move through the system. And I will tell you, the court recognized that the court had responsibility for those things taking so long. Very often, a judge would get assigned a case, and because that judge was assigned to that case, if the judge wasn't available, things got delayed. If the district attorney wasn't ready, things got delayed. If the defense wasn't ready, things got delayed. And they got delayed because that judge had to find a place 2 or 3 months down the road where there was room on his or her docket to put that whatever got delayed in. What happens now is if that judge can't do that case on that day, another judge does it. And so you don't have these cases dragging on nearly as long as they did under the old system.
Which kind of speaks to Jeff's point earlier about cases taking a long time and really disrupting people's lives. Jeff, I want to ask you, do you agree with the characterization that the new rules have created a public safety issue?
No, I don't agree with that at all. I think it's been helpful. Sometimes there's a disconnect between the idea of public safety and the Constitution. So most of us think the Constitution is a pretty great thing until it applies to us. And the issue is that people believe that once somebody's been arrested and they're on the news, then they're guilty. And it's a real hard pushback to convince people that, no, the Constitution really does mean what it says, and it's not just a great idea that we just talk about on the 4th of July. It means you are innocent until you're proven guilty. It means the state has to get their resources and their case together on time, and that the rule requires them to do things on set deadlines. People shouldn't be sitting in jail for months and months and months because the case isn't ready to go forward. Not always the state's fault, but it's oftentimes some kind of a combination between law enforcement and the state not being able to get their ducks in a row. I don't know about how whether the communication is better now than it has been, but we still see pretty often situations in which the discovery, which are the police reports and the things that the state relies upon to prosecute a case, is not ready at the time that the court management order says it should be. And we have a really difficult time trying to convince judges to actually follow the rule and to impose sanctions or to dismiss the case when the discovery, the police reports and such are not ready on time. The media sure makes oftentimes an appropriate, but I think a sometimes sensational issue out of the people who get released with the assumption that because they were arrested, they are certainly guilty and we're less safe as citizens because they're on the street. That's great if we don't have a presumption of innocence. So if we really believe that the Constitution exists, then the fact that people get released because either the state, by way of the district attorney's office or the police department, doesn't have their reports on time, then the Constitution is strengthened and there should be other kinds of remedial measures taken other than this outcry that the streets are less safe now than they were before?
Okay, so one of the main points of contention is that it's challenging to turn around evidence as quickly as is required under the new rules. And we've got Sergeant Liz Thompson on the line to talk about some of the struggles APD faces in turning that evidence around really quickly. Good morning, Sergeant Thompson.
Good morning.
So you're the supervisor of the homicide unit, is that correct?
Yes, that's correct.
And you deal with all kinds of evidence, right?
Absolutely.
Tell us about that. Tell us about the different kinds of evidence that you process.
Well, I think it's really important to point out that all of these cases that are, you know, going to court under these new rules are vastly different in how complex they are and what types of evidence, you know, we have to bring forward to make our case. And in homicides, that's particularly true. There is no such thing as sort of a run-of-the-mill homicide. And so sometimes we're looking at extremely complicated and vastly different types of evidence, everything from fingerprints and DNA all the way up to very complex technology, such as looking at surveillance videos, cellular phones, social media, and things like that. And it can become just this, you know, volumes and volumes of evidence that we have to provide.
Now, do you think resources are an issue when it comes to processing that evidence, Sergeant?
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. One good example would be that we had a homicide that we were able to look at the social media of the many people who were involved in what led up to the homicide. And once we wrote warrants and were able to look at the Facebook, and then Facebook provides this evidence, one Facebook account alone provided 20,000 pages of postings on Facebook for this one account. And so just thinking about the manpower necessary to analyze and review 20,000 pages of Facebook, keeping in mind that we may find what, you know, indicts that person in that Facebook, but we may also find what says that that person wasn't involved or did not participate. So it's extremely important that we thoroughly look at all this evidence and to make sure that we're getting it right, because we're charging someone with a very, very serious felony crime, and we are committed to keeping it, you know, very detailed, very thorough, and getting it right. The police department is absolutely committed to public safety, and we have had to add resources in order to meet the new rules so that we can just provide the man hours necessary to get it right.
Now, do you agree with the characterization that the new rules are creating dangerous situations and public safety issues in Albuquerque and in Bernalillo County?
I think that looking back over the year, we've learned a lot. I think that the potential exists that when there are problems with discovery that are out of the control of the police department, for example, and we present this to the court, and, you know, it seemed in the beginning that we weren't necessarily being listened to when we had something that was a problem, we had an explanation for it, and we would have liked more time. I think those are being worked out as we move forward, but the potential does exist that a case may be dismissed based on something that wasn't really evidence that went to the arrest of this person. I think those things are being worked out. I would characterize it more that the potential exists, and as long as we're all in this together, looking for justice and looking at it very detailed, and we're making accommodations for those things that don't really go to the reason this person was arrested. I think, you know, there's the potential is there, and I think we're all working on it very hard.
All right. Well, thank you so much for your time this morning, Sergeant Thompson.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
Okay, so the phone lines are filling up. We're going to take some calls, but first we're going to take a quick break. We're talking about speedier criminal justice system in Bernalillo County today. This is the KUNM Call-In Show, and I'm Marisa DeMarco. We'll be right back.
Support comes from Popejoy Hall, presenting the up-and-coming band Kala Nua on the Popejoy stage, a band that brings new sensibilities to traditional Irish sounds, Sunday, March 20th. Tickets and information at popejoypresents.com.
On the next Making Contact.
The family planning services, who were in charge of enforcing the one-child policy, began confiscating babies from families who had violated the policy.
Hear journalist Barbara Demick and Mei Fong, author of One Child, China's Most Radical Experiment, describe an aging and vastly male Chinese population after three decades of brutal family planning.
Friday morning at 8 on 89.9 KUNM.
Welcome back to the KUNM Call-In Show. I'm Marisa DeMarco, and we're talking about rules for cases that unclog the courts in the state's busiest judicial district. Joining us today are Jeff Ryan from the Public Defender's Office, District Attorney Carrie Brandenburg, and Artie Pepin from the Administrative Office of the Courts. We're going to actually take a call right now from from Alan in Albuquerque. Good morning, Alan.
Good morning. Perhaps this isn't exactly on target, but... I worked in the criminal justice system for about 20 years as a private investigator. And I think our system is completely out of touch with the people. For instance, I think that misdemeanors should be farmed out to probation officers, and nonviolent criminals should be... let back on the street on probation. That would take care of about 50% of the prisoners that are in jail now. The other thing I'd like to hear from any of your guests, especially the public,
public defender Jeff Ryan.
Yeah,
are you there, Alan?
Yes, I am. I have a cold, so I'm not thinking very well. Oh, the whole issue of race and cops, and that's a national calamity that's going on, especially for young black men who are being murdered on the streets by cops around the country on a regular basis. Last year, there was over 600 young black men killed by cops in this country. That's just absolutely not, permissible or tolerable. What I'm suggesting is that, I'm not condemning the people that are on the air or anything, but is that we need to revamp our whole system. It's nuts. It's way overloaded, and justice is not being served on a major basis.
All right, Jeff, do you want to address the idea of racial disparities in the system?
I can make an observation, and I think that it's more a reflection of poverty, at least here in Albuquerque and Bernalillo County, and probably more broadly in New Mexico. I think the problem is that we are at the bottom of the rung in most important livability categories like education, job growth, early parent education, and things like that. And what happens is that because of that status, the people at the bottom end of the rung end up getting into trouble more often because there are fewer opportunities, because there's less guidance, because there's realistically less hope to have tomorrow be better than today. And it just so happens that that is more often than not a reflection of minority populations. I don't necessarily think it's just a crime issue. I think it's a much broader social issue.
All right, we're going to take a call from Denicia in Albuquerque. Good morning, Denicia.
Hello.
Hi, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Good morning. What's your question or comment for us this morning?
My comment is I wanted to point to the larger issues in the criminal justice system. I work with women and girls in the criminal justice system, and many of those women and women who are in MDC in our prisons are survivors of sexual violence, are stuck in cycles of addiction. And I think much of this burden that's on the courts would be alleviated if we really treated addiction as a healthcare issue. You know, our criminal justice system is currently not evaluating risk, but, you know, locking everyone up when there's serious issues of addiction that needed to be treated as a healthcare issue instead of a crime.
All right. Thank you, Denicia. Carrie Brandenburg.
Yeah. Denicia, I'm a prosecutor, so you wouldn't think that I might have these opinions. I think it's critical that we bring more resources to the table. The goal of the criminal justice system and of any prosecutor is to see that that person never reoffends. The best way to assure that is to figure out what the problem is and fix it. I agree with you. A lot of people involved in the criminal justice system have addiction problems. They don't have an education. They don't have a family or support structure. And no matter what we do, they're not going to be successful unless we bring resources to the table and we're able to make referrals. That's how we can help and keep them from reoffending. And when I was a defense attorney, I knew that. As a prosecutor, I know that. As a mom, I know that. It's just common sense. And instead, and I was terribly disappointed with our last legislative session, they just wanted stricter laws. What we need are resources to change these individuals' behavior and get them help so they aren't part of the criminal justice system.
All right. We've got Kelly Bradford, who is the Adult Detention Reform Coordinator for Bernalillo County, on the line. Good morning, Kelly Bradford.
Good morning.
Now, how have these new rules affected the Metropolitan Detention Center or your work?
I would say with the case management order, the CMO, as most of us call it, we know that it has impacted the jail population. To what degree, it's very hard for us to determine. We've, over the last several years, have implemented through the collaboration of the criminal justice partners many different strategies. But it makes a lot of sense that if you implement a rule that expedites cases and creates efficiencies for those people that are sitting in our jail, that those cases that would impact those cases, that it will move their cases along a little bit faster and get them to wherever it is they need to be faster, whether it's DOC, probation, their case dismissed, whatever that may be. And so if folks aren't piling up in our facility, then that is a benefit to taxpayers because it costs quite a bit of money per day to house someone. So we do think it has impacted the jail population. It's very hard to determine to what degree. We do know that the majority of folks that that the CMO does impact are, in fact, not in custody, but we do know that many of them are in custody. And so, you know, over the last several years, since about 2015, about this time, February 2015, we know that our length of stay has decreased by about 23%. So the longer that people, the shorter amount of time that people stay in custody definitely benefits taxpayers.
And can you speak to, Kelly, can you speak to some of the broader impacts on the community and on the county as a whole?
Well, yeah. I mean, back when I started on this journey, which was in 2012, our jail was busting at the seams. We were above our capacity, and it was to the point where in 2013, the county started not just shipping people to other facilities within the within New Mexico, but we started shipping people out of state, and it was costing our local taxpayers about $35,000 a day, and it would have been about $12 million a year. I believe we ended up spending about $8 million that particular fiscal year. And so by implementing things like the CMO and some other measures, we've been able to lower that jail population by about 40 to 44%. We're now well below capacity. It's a much safer environment for both staff that work at the jail and the inmates. And so that has a great impact. I think also the CMO has really been able to open a dialogue amongst all of the criminal justice stakeholders for us to really look at what we're doing here locally. What are we doing right? What can we do better? Where are our gaps? And I think that dialogue has really brought together this partnership that we're seeing now on the local level of not just the CMO, but so many other things that we're trying to do here.
All right. Well, thank you so much for your time this morning, Kelly.
Thank you.
All right, next we have Sophie Cooper on the line from Albuquerque. Good morning, Sophie.
Good morning. I'm a team manager in the felony division, the Albuquerque Public Defender. And I wanted to talk about one of the things that the rule did to help make the whole system run more efficiently, which was to get the information that the state has that they're basing their charging on to the defense attorney quickly. We call that discovery. I want to tell you a little how we used to work cases and how we changed, and that it's been really a wonderful difference. For many, many years here, after a person was formally charged, indicted, had their arraignment, we would wait 30 to 60 days to get basic police reports from the state. We would not get the collateral discovery that should have been sent with those police reports, such as recordings by the police of interrogations, belt tapes, lapel cams, different information that the state already had on the case when they chose to charge our client. I would have to work my case by looking at what I got at a particular point in time and making to-do notes, ordering from evidence at APD these collateral parts of evidence, waiting weeks to receive it, then seeing what I couldn't get, filing discovery motions, and essentially reworking my case every couple of weeks.
Sophie, I'm sorry to break in here. I got
usually get
Sophie?
All this information.
Sophie, can you hear me? Sophie.
And with that, I have a different perspective as a defense attorney.
Sophie, can I ask you to turn off your radio? Because it's creating kind of a feedback issue.
So now I'm able to begin my own investigation into my client's claims very quickly.
Okay, we're gonna have to move on, Sophie. Thank you so much for calling in today. As we near the end of the program, Jeff Ryan, do you think we're better off today than we were a year ago?
Absolutely. I think that there's some predictability in the system now. Everybody has a much better understanding about timelines. There's more focus on making things happen in a reasonable period of time. I think that by and large, it's resulted in all the players having to step up their game and be ready to move the cases along. The one, leg, I think, that isn't up to speed with the rest of us are the judges and their unwillingness to actually impose appropriate sanctions when the rule is not followed. But I suspect that as time goes on, they'll become a little more comfortable with that.
Now, District Attorney Brandenburg, do you think the new rules are sustainable?
I think that as they evolve, and I think they will continue to evolve, I think the court will keep an eye on it. I think that they are. I don't think that we're better off than we were. I think that as we continue with this process, as we make the necessary changes, and we evolve, which hopefully all good, decent, rational people do, things eventually will be better.
And do you intend to continue to push on the evidence portion of this?
Always. Not only with the courts to say be a little more lax, but to try to help law enforcement say get us the information that we need, develop systems that will speed up that process.
Now, one of the things that you and I have talked about previously is that because of limited resources and you have to focus on the biggest, most violent cases, that it makes it so that you can't focus on some of these lower level offenders and kind of catch them in the system before and help them before their issues become exacerbated and they end up back in the system. And this includes people with mental health issues, right?
Right. That includes people with mental health issues. I think that the courts have been saying, and possibly the public defenders, but I've heard it from the courts, just don't charge any fourth degree felonies. Just throw them away and just deal with the more serious cases. And lots of times fourth-degree felonies end up to be third-degree felonies or second-degree felonies. And there are people that possibly we could change that behavior if we got to them early enough. And there's also a separation of powers. That's up to the DA to decide, not the courts. And we do deal with mentally ill individuals. Once again, we need resources. We desperately need resources. Half of our state's on Medicaid, and now 25% of it's on food stamps. I mean, it's a crazy world that we're living in.
All right, we're going to take one more call from Alan in Albuquerque. Good morning, Alan.
Good morning. Yes, hi. I was a juror in two cases of last month. There were cases against children, and I have to say afterwards we talked to the prosecutors, and they were basically given the cases maybe a 2 to 3 days before trial. And I have to say that this speed up really gives me deep concern about how are we, you know, really keeping the, you know, violent offenders off the street. And I have to say the speed up of the trial, I felt like the prosecutors didn't have the adequate resources to prosecute a full case. They weren't able to identify witnesses. And as a result, I think that, you know, yes, speedy trial, but was justice served. And so I'd like to take my comment off the air and thank you.
Oh, thank you for calling in this morning, Alan. I appreciate it. Now, Mr. Pepin, do you think it's possible for there to be further revisions to these rules to address some of these lingering concerns?
Yes, I do. And I think that that's the whole reason why the Supreme Court met with folks at the end of last year and made the revisions they made in February. I don't know about Alan's experience as a juror. I can tell you, and I'm sure that District Attorney Brandenburg will tell you, the attorneys don't get assigned the day before they go to trial. These cases get charged, and then time occurs before somebody goes to trial. What's sped up by the rules mainly, besides those predictable dates when things will occur, is that when someone is charged, whatever got them charged, that probable cause evidence has to be provided. And I think that the court is willing. I can't speak for the court. I'm not a member of the Supreme Court. But they issued the rule, and they have shown a great willingness to listen to the folks involved in the criminal justice system about how to make these rules better. But make no mistake, the rules are not going to go away. We need to make the system in Bernalillo County work appropriately. Give enough time. I was very encouraged to hear Sergeant Thompson's comments about the provision of new resources into cases of homicide that she investigates. We need to put resources into those people who are dangerous and present the biggest public safety threat. And we need to make sure the system doesn't keep someone like Vincent in jail for 14 months on fourth-degree charges that he eventually pled guilty to and then never got to trial.
All right. Well, I know there's so much more to talk about, but we have to wrap it up today. We're coming to the end of the hour, and you can find links on this topic and our coverage online at KUNM.org. Thank you for joining us today on the KUNM Call-In Show. Jeff Ryan of the Public Defender's Office, District Attorney Carrie Brandenburg, and Artie Pepin of the Administrative Office of the Courts. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you, Marisa.
Thanks.
If you missed any of our program, or if you'd like to share it with friends, the audio of this show will be posted on our website, KUNM.org, where you can also find previous call-in shows. Next week on the show, we'll look at the growing number of people in New Mexico who've been diagnosed with Alzheimer's and talk about options they have for care. That's next Thursday morning at 8. Thanks to Jefferson White, our engineer today. Kaveh Movahed screened your calls. Anna Landy live-tweeted the show. Rashad Mahmoud assisted with production. And Elaine Baumgartel is our executive producer. This show is part of KUNM's Public Health New Mexico project. It's funded by the W.K. Kellogg Foundation and the Con Alma Health Foundation. I'm Marisa DeMarco. This is KUNM.